VoiceOver Coffee Shop, Episode 81.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we give you a glimpse into the world of the biggest voice actors in the industry over a delicious cup of coffee. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there. My name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to get to know more about me, you can check out my website at andrewdmorrison.com. In this episode, we have the absolutely amazing Lynn Norris, and an incredibly savvy businesswoman with a wealth of knowledge in so many industries, both from learning and firsthand experience under her belt. She is also one of the co-founders of VA for VO, a boutique platform built for voice talent to outsource help in all aspects of their business. In this episode, we talk about using a business background to navigate a voiceover business, being a confident problem solver for clients, joining VA for VO, and finding marketing knowledge outside the voiceover industry.
Awesome. Hey, Lynn, how are you doing?
I'm great, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. So how do you take your coffee in the morning?
I don't actually drink coffee. Oh, I know that's sacrilege on this podcast.
Well, no. A lot of people don't drink coffee. Like, what is kind of like your morning routine? That's just more of a communal thing because so many people drink coffee. And so like it's more of a, that's what their morning routine is. But like, how do you generally start your day?
Well, I used to be very addicted to Diet Coke and or Diet Pepsi. I mean, for a long time, it was Diet Coke and I wouldn't drink any other type of diet anything. But then I was like, oh, well, the Diet Coke wasn't available. And I was like, all right, I'll drink Diet Pepsi. And then I kind of moved over to drinking Diet Pepsi. Mm-hmm. But I had a little cardiac scare in January. And I think it was more just stress and reflux than it was anything cardiac related. But and of course, every doctor they talk to is like, don't drink anything with caffeine in it ever. So I kind of tried to put water, much more water into my routine and slowly moved from 12-ounce cans down to 7-ounce cans and not every day. And like, so now I'll enjoy a 7-ounce can of Diet Pepsi occasionally, but it's mostly just water. Occasionally tea. I don't like hot drinks. Okay. So, you know, iced chai, I had one. My sister likes iced chai, and I finally had one the other day. And I was like, oh, this is dangerous. This tastes really good. But yeah, it's mostly water. That's the liquid of choice in my big giant. I have a million cups like this. It has to have a handle. It has to have a straw. I have a bunch of them.
Oh, I hate handles. I don't know why. I like my coffee cups with handles, but like my other jug is literally just a 1.5 liter. Like, I don't like
it. Yeah. Oh, no, I have to have the handle. I'm completely the opposite, which is good. You'll have your handle handleless. I'll have my handles.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've been I don't know that I have like an everyday morning routine other than, you know, getting up. And I used to work for a publication called The Street. Do you know who Jim Cramer is? He's
no. Yes.
He's a stock
yes.
guy.
Yeah.
He shouts about stocks.
Yeah.
Well, he has a massive footprint in the financial world. And so he has a publication called The Street, and they write morning briefings, and they used to have it narrated. So there would be an audio version of it. And I did that for about 5 years. And so it meant every single morning up at about, well, first it was, I also did Al Jazeera in the morning. So it was Al Jazeera and The Street. So I would be up at 5 recording those. Then when it was finally was just down to The Street, it was usually like 6:30 when they'd have the briefings ready to go. So that was usually my morning routine, was wake up, get out of bed, walk into studio, read The Street. but now I don't do that. So it's a little bit more like, all right, what's on the docket? What kind of auditions? That kind of thing to get the day started. So,
yeah, and I was going to ask you
breakfast in there somewhere.
I was going to ask you how you started in voiceover, but I went down the whole LinkedIn rabbit hole, and like it said that you started in 1990, but then I was like, wait, bachelor in music and back office trade functions with Triton and responsible for finance portfolios and senior business analyst and application development and copyright and award-winning VO and co-founder of the greatest VO outsourcing platform. Like, who are you? Like, like you really did the, no, mom, I don't want to be on Wall Street. I want to be an actor. Like, so I really more want to, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of did. Yeah, the 1990s, just for full transparency, is that line item on my LinkedIn is for singing and for voiceover. So the singing, I got a degree in 1990 from Northern Arizona University in vocal performance, classically trained opera singer, basically. So I've been singing, well, honestly, I've been singing my entire life, singing since I was a little kid. And performing. So yes, it's misleading. I own that.
Yeah.
A little bit. I should split them out, but that's just me being lazy. But I have been doing voiceover. I did do voiceover in my very first voiceover job was ADR for a Saturday morning cartoon called Huntic. And so on the WB, like, you know, check the Saturday morning cartoon box.
Yeah.
But it was a single episode of this show called Huntic, with, you know, incredible voice actors being the main characters in it. It was produced out of Italy. And then, so I was doing some ADR and I had never done anything before and did this audition through the way it used to work for getting some of these auditions were these kind of email listicle things. So you'd get on an email list and then you'd get sent a notice of like, hey, Tuesday night, they're doing X amount of auditions for, you know, come read for casting directors kind of thing. So my friend was on this list for in-person and on-camera and theatrical stuff. And she saw this audition for voice acting. She said, why don't you go do it? So it was actually with Carrie, I'm always going to say her name wrong, Karenin. Please, I hope she doesn't listen to this and me butchering her name, but she's an amazing, wonderful casting director. And she was in New York at the time. Now she's in LA. I'm sure everybody who's done gaming knows who I'm talking about and that I've destroyed her last name. Karenin, I think is how you say it. Anyway, I got to read for her. Didn't know anything about anything and didn't get cast for that role. But then they kept bringing me back to read some stuff and they brought me back for this character that was the teenage queen of the Amazons, Queen Hippolyta. And that's cool. they wanted an accent that they couldn't place. They were like, she's Amazonian. So don't, you know, and I think some of the people that they'd been bringing in were much better at the time at accents than I was. So like they sounded too French or they sounded too whatever. So they were more recognizable. So my hot mess of whatever accents at the time, I just kind of threw together some mishmash. And so that booked me the job, which was incredible. So I got to do an hour of ADR and learn about that. And so I was like, okay, I am so hooked. But I think that was like, I want to say it was like 2010. But then I was obviously my day job. I moved to New York in 1993 and needed a job. So I temped when temping was still kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm aging myself because I'm very old, but so I would temp at various offices and got assigned to temp at a company called Oryx. They were a Japanese company. This was a US subsidiary, their financial firm. And they liked me, so they kept me on. I actually called the agency and said, I'm super bored. Can I get a new job? Can you assign me somewhere else? And they were like, please don't leave. They need you for a few weeks. And then they kind of figured out that I could handle more than just answering the phone. And I was literally taking a fax, making a copy of it. It was a pricing sheet for securities, making a copy of it and handing it out to some of the analysts. And that was it all day. It was so boring. But when they found out that I could do other stuff, I supported the two top guys. And one of them kind of gave me this job to shut me up, I think, to like, this will take her the rest of the week to do. And it took me the rest of the day to do, and I was done. And he was like, oh, okay. Let me teach you this. Let me teach you that. So then that grew into learning financial systems and, you know, creating spreadsheets and doing all kinds of database stuff. And then that grew to various other jobs for Wall Street financial firms, in operations, and then in technology. My final job was for a firm that has since merged with another firm, but they were a financial firm that did funds, a lot of funds, basically. They invest in bonds mostly and in other derivative products. And I worked in the technology side, basically being the interpreter for business and tech. So my job was to take requirements from the business side and bring it back to the developers, because we were building everything in-house, or most things in-house. We were using a system that I was familiar with from the job I had prior to that, which is why I got the job. Anyway, a long story. So I would go back and speak business requirements to tech, and then explain technology to business people, and like, oh, what you're asking for is really artificial intelligence, and we're not building that. No. So he's like, I'm sorry, I can't make it make decisions for you, but I can make the buttons like that you use easy and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's funny because because of that experience, I'm very much a too many clicks person.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons why, even though I used Nimble and I think Nimble is super powerful, it's too many clicks. There's too many damn clicks to do anything you need to do. I'm like, I want like three at the most to be done with everything I need to do. So anyway, yeah, that's my long, like how I kind of got to the place where I was in a position where I can say I was very, very lucky to have a job that paid me extremely well that I hated by the end. I mean, it's just burnt out and tired of all of it, and fighting with business people about technology and then fighting with technology about business sucks. So it got to a place where I was pretty miserable, and I had been going to VO Atlanta. I have gone to every VO Atlanta except the first one.
Okay.
So I had gone to VO Atlanta, and my friend lived in Atlanta, so I would go to VO Atlanta and I would see her. And I would tell her every year that I wanted to quit my job and do voiceover, because I was learning more about it and, you know, wanting to work in it. But it was very hard. Like, I was not in a position where I could have left my job and gone to a session in New York during the day, or, you know, run over to do an audition. That just wasn't going to happen. Even though I was pretty close to where a lot of the studios were, I couldn't be like, sorry, peace out for a couple hours. See you later. That wasn't going to happen. So I went in 2016 in March. Okay. And then I had, you know, the visit with my friend. And she said, you've been telling me every year that you're going to quit and do this thing. Like, I don't want you to tell me again if you don't do it. Like, just do it already. I'm tired of hearing about it. I mean, she was lovely about it. She was being funny, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? That's it. And I was working on a project that I was very involved in. So I couldn't just be like, peace, 2 weeks, here you go, I'm out. So I gave them 6 months, and I quit in March and I left in September, and was fortunate I had some equity in the company. So, you know, it was a very good financial situation to start a business with, because you really should have the money to invest if you're going to do this thing. So it enabled me to buy expensive microphones and get the right technology and buy a Mac. I had a MacBook Pro for a long time, and, you know, it was thousands of dollars and, you know, tens of thousands, you know, that kind of thing. And study with all the right people and go to VO, the Euro, first Euro retreat, which was incredible. And that's where I mean, I had met Bridget before, but that's where Bridget Real and I became close friends, and Jay Michael, and like, it just opened up this whole world because of this job that I was unhappy in, but that I was fortunate enough to be paid well. So then I was like, I'm finally gonna do it.
So when you first branched off, what was your first approach to starting to hunt down work? Like, were you immediately doing commercial reach out to advertising agencies, or were you hopping on pay to plays back then, or like?
No, at first I was going to be an audiobook narrator, and I
Okay.
kind of thought I might only be an audiobook narrator. So I learned about ACX. There's a class that's run by David H. Lawrence the 17th. He's part of VO Heroes. That's his program, and he teaches it with another gentleman named Dan, and I'm so bad with names. If I ever meet you and I don't know your name, anyone who's listening to this, it is because I am the worst, clearly, with names. I am great with faces, but I'm crap with names. But anyway, Dan and David H. Lawrence the 17th, which is hard to forget that name. They run a program. It's called the ACX Masterclass. And so I took that and learned about how to approach the job. And they have since, really grown that program. And once you're in the program, you're in the program. So you get all the updates and all of that, which is awesome. So I started there. I had to record my first book, which luckily was pretty short, and nonfiction, three times because I
Three
had no
times.
idea what I was doing. So I didn't know the right settings to use in the DAW. I was still learning. Don't do it this way. This is the worst way to do it. Learn what you're doing first. Because I didn't understand how to, get it to the right, normalized to negative three or whatever the ACX standard is. Now it's just programmed into my DAW, so I don't think about it. But at the time I was still learning, and the author was absolutely lovely about the fact that I had no clue. So they weren't mad that I would submit audio that ACX would reject. Then I didn't know how to fix. So then I would reset the setting, go and learn and watch everything on ACX. They teach you how to do it too. And so, learning from there and then doing it again and then having it fail and then having to do it again. I was like, oh, okay, I'm never doing this again. I'm gonna get my ducks in a row for it. But yeah, I'm one of the do as others say, not as I did. But then I The probably one of the better pieces of advice that I have gotten, although I have gotten a lot of good, great advice from people in the industry, but Edge Studio, David from Edge Studio said, you should go to VO Atlanta. Like they were at the time, they were a big sponsor of VO Atlanta as well. And so I went on his advice, and that's what cracked open the world for me, so that I could meet other teachers and listen to people give it. I went obviously to every hour of classes that I could go to, and then the next year I signed up for some X sessions. So just getting in front of people, learning, growing. I haven't, because now I work for most of the conferences or am a sponsor. So I either do work or sponsor or both. I don't get to attend them a lot anymore. So occasionally I'll, like at one voice, I made sure to pay for one of the sessions so I could go and be, I went to Billy Calura's class, which was so awesome. And the year before at VO Atlanta, I went to Vince Lubica's class, which was also, so I mean, I'm trying to get in front of people at this point, but it's a little harder when I either have to be at a booth or doing work for the conference. So, but yeah, that's kind of how it grew. But I've always been in every job that I've done, including when I was doing work in offices. I'm just kind of a jack of all trades. If you show me how to do something that you need done, I can probably learn it and take care of it. So it's kind of been that way in voiceover a little bit. Because I have so much acting training and opera training and all of that background, I want to do everything, right? Which was one of the great things about audiobooks is that you get to be every character and the set, de not the set designer, that's the author, but you get to do it all. And that's very appealing to me. So I have dabbled in a little, like I wouldn't say that I have one area where I have done the vast majority of my work. It's kind of been in lots of different areas. So that's been cool.
Okay. And with you having so much experience in back office stuff from your corporate side of life, do you implement any of those systems in like untraditional ways where most voice actors don't? So that way you can focus more of your brain on the creative and focus on your little job scavenger hunts and stuff like that.
I mean, no, because most of the systems that I was working on are too big for what I would need, you know,
okay.
large CRMs like Salesforce
yeah.
or something that are, you know,
gotcha.
They're just too big. Like I don't, as a solopreneur, need Salesforce. Or, you know, and a lot of the other programs were built in house. So they're not systems I could implement anyway. I like spreadsheets, so I use them to track stuff. I like to-do list books. So I still am very old school about like writing them down. I like the books
yeah.
now. I have written many a to-do list on the back of a receipt. So, you know, I'm kind of old school, even though I like systems.
Yeah.
I also like to be hands-on, so.
Well, then let me switch that. Has your understanding of the corporate world helped you to further understand your clients when you're reaching out to corporate agencies?
Sure. Yeah. It certainly has helped me understand when you're trying to figure out, okay, I've gone to a company's website and I can see what the titles are or the group structures. I can probably figure out pretty quickly who's gonna even have an answer for you. Rather than, you know, firing into the void and hoping you can find somebody who might know somebody who might have hired the continuing education company they use. Like I can get to those because I've been in corporate world enough to kind of understand some job titles. It's
okay.
That's probably been faster for me. I mean, it depends on the industry though. Like I love medical narration and I've done a good amount of it now. And if there was one area where I could just be the medical narrator person, give that to me. Because
yeah.
I absolutely love doing, you know, give the hardest word you can possibly think of, like give it to me so I can figure out how to say it and then practice it till it can just roll off. Like, yes, I say this terribly hard, crazy word every day. But so I have friends who are doctors. So then I ask them who they go to. So, I mean, it's the same research everybody's doing.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm that much faster at it, except that it didn't, the learning curve for job descriptions and navigating corporate structures is faster for me. But
okay. And I've talked to Bridget about like how she became a part of founding VA for VO, but I don't know how you got wrapped into that circus. How did you become one of the pillar members of the VA for VO service?
Well, so I was considering opening a VA for VO as a I'll be your VA company, because
okay.
I've done obviously a lot of support work and so I had been thinking about that and actually had looked into domains, like had the domain. Sorry, Dan. I didn't know that Dan Friedman had trademarked the number 4 VO. So I had domains that were VA number 4 VO.
Okay.
We very quickly cleared that up and we don't use that anymore. It's like
yeah.
FOR now. And he's cool with that. He was so great about it. But anyway, so I was already like in the motion with that. And then, Bridget and I we had been talking about how do we teach other people how to do some of the support work that we've been doing. So we were thinking about that. And so she and I taught the All About Outsourcing class for VO Atlanta for a couple of years. So we did it 1 year and we had just a few people came. It wasn't a big crowd, but they loved it. We got like really great responses back. And then we did it again. And you know, so the All About Outsourcing class, which is part of, if you sign up as a VO with VA for VO, you get that All About Outsourcing class. but we break down systems and we talk about how to plan and how to figure out what tasks, you know, we have this whole love, hate, good, bad matrix. So she and I had been doing that, and she knew that I had been thinking about doing VA for VO, but I hadn't really moved on it because I wasn't sure. And then about that time, you know, her story is that she was working with a VA, and then Miranda found her. And so it all kind of was happening at the same time, these moving parts. But Bridget and I taught all about outsourcing, and we're looking at making more courses instead of me offering the service as being the VA, that I would offer some classes on teaching other people how to be VAs. And it all kind of felt together in that way. So, yeah, I was always, you know, I was always there. We were teaching the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, so, you guys were like in tandem and kind of came together like puzzle pieces. I didn't mean to make it sound like she created it and then you just came in. I'm sorry. No. I know it was a joint effort, but like I was just curious because I've only ever talked to her about her side of it.
Well, right. So, I mean, yeah. Bridget's story is compelling because she was hiring VAs. So right. She had that, you know, background and experience of working with people. My Zoom froze for a second there. She has the story of working with people and hiring. And I had been, obviously, I have worked many, many a year supporting groups in the corporate space. So brought all of that kind of background and knowledge, and systems are easy for me. So if you put a system in front of me, I can probably learn it pretty quickly. So when she talks about her story, it's mostly because she's explaining how people get hired and why you would need to hire someone and what her experience was about hiring them. So
yeah.
I don't have that story. So she tells that part.
Right. So as your personal business is growing, what do you find that you have to delegate more and more?
Well, so marketing, clearly, which is what the request that VA for VO, the most help people need is in the marketing space, of course, right? It's the more like, I mean, I know you love marketing, but it's probably the piece where if you haven't had to do a lot of marketing, or if your mindset is that you grew up being told that you were never to brag, and that you weren't supposed to tell people that you were good at anything. That's kind of how I was raised. Not in a bad way. My parents were super supportive, but you know, you're not supposed to say the braggadocious things about yourself. You're supposed to show up, do good work, be of service, and others will say good things about you. Like, then if other people say good things about you, that's great. But you're not supposed to be like, yeah, I'm the shiznits. Like, you're not supposed to be that person. So marketing is harder, right? Feels grosser to people who haven't learned that, no, marketing is actually service.
Yeah.
And so I've also done a whole bunch of classes and work in learning about business and marketing, not in the voiceover space. I mean, I've also learned from all the great marketing.
Love that.
We have great marketing teachers. Mark Scott, I call him coach. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the coach, but Jonathan.
Oh,
Tilly
I use
well.
I use Viopreneur as like a search engine almost to be like, hey, I'm having this problem with my thing. How do you blah? Oh, there's a Viopreneur episode about it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But Jonathan Tilly, Tom Deere, who was an early coach and like was, you know, I wouldn't know part of what I know now without those people. But I've also done tons of work, you know, with Funnels and Russell Brunson and Dean Graziosi and Tony Robbins, but also Marie Forleo and B School. And I follow a number of copywriters, Alex Cotoni and Laura Belgrade. Like, I'm very interested in being up on what those people are doing and how other businesses are running and trying to, you know, mill that for ideas that might be applicable to the voiceover space. We are so niche if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, what we do is so niche, and there are a ton of buyers in lots of different places, but still in the grand scheme of things, there aren't that many compared with people who want to buy shoes or, you know, makeup or whatever else. So, I love learning about that kind of stuff too. So I try to bring those ideas when we're working on new things for VA for VO, like how can we expand it, grow, all of that, being of service. One of the things that Dean Graziosi says a lot is that if you don't tell people what you can do and the level you can do it at, you're doing them a disservice.
Right.
So you have to tell people that you're good. And I talk about that in my copywriting class, that you have to tell them. You can't be like, I mean, I guess I'm all right. That was me, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but inside my ego and my head's going like, I'm damn good at this, right? But I would never say that out loud because that's not how I was raised. It sounds gross, feels gross. But you have to be able to say to people, yes, I can do what you need and I can do it well and accurately and you'll be happy. Like you'll be, and you'll want to come back. Lots of my clients do. Like you want to tell people about those things because no one wants to buy from somebody who's like, well, I mean, I guess I'm okay.
Right.
Right.
You're here to solve a problem. Like, you got to be confident that you can solve it. Right.
Right. You're like, you've come to the right place. And I talk about it in the context of a shoe store. You wouldn't want somebody to who was shopping for shoes if you ran a shoe store, walk through your door and you'd be like,
I mean, we have socks. I
I
guess
don't
we have some shoes.
Yeah,
So.
right. Exactly. You'd want to be like, we have the exact shoe for you. In fact, we have five different of the exact same shoe for you. Do you have a wider toe box or a narrow toe box? I actually did sell shoes, which is one of the reasons why I could talk about it. But yes, exactly. Solve those problems for people. And when we started VA for VO, that's really the reason, right? We wanted to teach people how to make more money in service in this industry. And that there and help the people who were like, I can never get my business to grow to the next level because I just don't have time for fill in the blank reason. No judgment about whatever reason keeps you from being able to do stuff that you need to do but can't, haven't done, whatever, right? Family thing, life gets in the way, burnout's real, like you need help, right? So I to answer your question that you asked a thousand years ago before I waxed rhapsodic, I have outsourced mostly emails. I use Anganguzo's Boss Blasts as well to get the word out.
Okay.
So that's kind of outsourced. I mean, it's buying a service. They provide the leads. Every month I write the email, but then they send it on my behalf, which is great. And Anne has a fantastically large list, and I went all in on getting it. But I've also used VA services to do LinkedIn marketing and to lead gen there. I always have whoever is doing lead gen for me. It's always mixed with email because if you just give me leads, I probably won't send that first email out very fast. And that's why get a lead if you're not going to immediately reach out to them? So,
And you
yeah.
talked about like looking outside of VO industries for marketing stuff, outside of books, because I love books. Where are you going to find like outside of VO marketing knowledge? Because I've had the problem where, like, say email marketing, for example, I would go to look up follow-up strategies and I would just get like very like the broad marketing thing is sales. And so I would get a lot of the, well, if you're not selling on the first cold call, then why are you like, why are you don't need to do follow-ups? And like, so where are you, where do you go to search for some of that knowledge? I found a couple of places, but I'm just curious.
Well, I've been very lucky in that the people that I've decided to pay attention to, so Russell Brunson, Marie Forleo, have led me out to others. It's that idea that, you're a product of the five people you surround yourself with. Well, these people are incredibly successful, seemingly happy. have things that we all want, right? So, and are teaching you how to find that. So, I mean, sometimes it'll lead you to a place where you're like, all right, this person, I don't vibe with them. Like, it feels a little like, eh, you too can be this. I'm like, have you really succeeded? Like, Were you just teaching others how to do
or
it?
Did you just sell this course and make millions? Right.
Well, I mean, hey, I have sold courses about stuff, so no shade for course builders.
Right. But I feel like what makes a teacher is that you have built in, that you have an irrefutable stack of proof that this has worked for you before you become a teacher. I feel like that is what makes a good teacher.
Well, I also think too that at some points you have to start, right? So if you haven't had the proof in, you know, decades of proof, but you have studied, I mean, it's kind of like the same with voiceover, right? You've studied with the best, you've worked, you know what you're doing, you have the right studio set up. Same kind of idea. Like you have to, you're going to start with maybe not the 45 clients and here's all the proof of how great I am. Right.
Right. No, so, no, I meant course building, not.
Yeah, no. So in course building, it's the same kind of thing. So you got to work with the right people. If you're going to build a course, you either need to have the equivalent of a Yale degree, like that kind of thing, right? You need the bona fides somewhere, either in that you have amassed a huge amount of knowledge and have, you know, created a program that, yes, works for you, but maybe you don't have 10 years of proof of it yet, right? But you need some sort of bona fides if you're making a course, And there are lots of courses out there that'll sell you stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Don't sell snake oil when it's just knowledge consolidation. Right.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Well, and I'm also a big proponent of, I mean, I have certainly shared, I didn't pop into the universe with SEO knowledge or how to write stuff or how to be a copywriter. Right. So, but I'm very big on giving credit where credit is due. Where did I learn this? Right.
Right.
Who am I reading? Where am I getting the information? And so, yeah, I've been lucky in that most of the teachers that I have started to listen to, follow, pay attention to, have led me to others. Laura Belgray writes emails. She's a copywriter, but she writes hilarious emails, but she also then is a big affiliate marketer for other teachers. And so once you trust someone like Laura Belgray, who's had a huge career being a very, very successful writer and writes emails that sell and then sell you on somebody else, then you're like, that email worked. Laura Belgray is great. So she's an affiliate teacher, but also has programs of her own. So that's how I have found these others instead of doing a Google research and saying, how do I learn this? Or, you know, there's nothing wrong with Googling follow-up strategies. There's probably lots of great sources for that kind of stuff. There's also good sources for SEO. I do a lot of looking up, you know, facts about SEO and then happening on teachers who have whole programs about SEO. And then I'm like, this is great.
Yeah, like Patel, that one dude we talked about, where he puts all of his information on his site, and the only reason he does that is because corporate company, like his target is Fortune 500 companies, and they don't want to do it. So he says, here's everything I'm going to do.
Yeah. Patel's great, and he writes articles all the time, and so I'm on his email blast, of course, and so I'm going to update my class. I have new ideas for, you know, talking about new SEO strategies, because it always changes.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I have found great teachers. Fantastic. And it's the same way in the voiceover space.
Yeah.
You know, you work with someone that you trust that has helped you improve, and then they know others, or you go to VO Atlanta or One Voice or Mavo or Nevo, or so, you know, go to the Nava. Like, there's so many opportunities to be around others who will then happily tell you their favorite teachers and what, you know, you have to work with this person, they're amazing, or, you know, do your demo with this person because this is incredible. Like, we have lots of opinions we are happy to share.
So what's next for you? Like, what are your goals? What does your hopeful future look like in your voiceover career and beyond?
I've been asking myself, because I'm in my 50s, so where does retirement happen ever? Like, what, when I was on the, corporate track and Wall Street or whatever, earning enough money to retire early. So what would retirement early look like? Is there a retirement early trajectory here? I don't know. I don't know if I want to. There are times where I'm like, bag this, I'm out. It's just done. I want to go sit on a beach. But most of the time, obviously, I still very much love what I do, like we all do. But yeah, I think mine are kind of open. I'm pursuing medical narration jobs. Like, I'm trying to really be focused there. But my nature is jack of all trades, so it doesn't stop me from also wanting to do political work and commercial stuff and, a little dabbling of here and there. Plus, I mean, we teach it all the time. You have to be diversified. So I also work and do VA work or voiceover conference adjacent work. So probably it's the same, keeping many irons in the fire, trying to make sure that I don't wake up and go sit in my regular booth. Everything is in one place. So my desk, my microphone, everything. So I work from there. But I have many a day woken up, gone in there, and then by 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night, realized I haven't left the room, which isn't good for your health. It isn't good for your brain. I'm feeling like every single day, Saturday, Sunday included, 7 days a week, being, hustling, and then feeling resentful for it and pissed, that I'm like, oh, this is just, that's why when I get to where I'm like, bag this, because I haven't given myself any time to rest, to just not do that. And then I feel super guilty when I do, send out the booking out email and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be gone for this length of time. I went to Croatia for 2 weeks last year. Oh, if I could move to Croatia, Mo Rock, I'm so jealous of you. Like, she moved to Croatia. I'm like, oh, I mean, I'm so happy for her because what a fantastic experience. But oh, Croatia, I love it. But when I was, before I was going, the fact that it was 2 weeks long was super stressful. And I finally had to get to the point where I was like, you know what? I'll take other record. I didn't want to take like my main. I have a duplicate rig, so everything that's in my main is also my carrying, thanks to my job a long time ago that paid me a lot of money. But I'm not suggesting that's what everyone should have to do. But I didn't want to take that to with me to Croatia, so I took other microphones and different tech. But my main agents said, no, go enjoy. We're not going to bother you. Like, just go take the time, really. And so I did. And it was freeing. And I'm sure lots of people will tell you that. Like, you have to take the time to relax. But, and I hear it and it kind of goes, yeah. I don't really own it very often, but when I went to Croatia, I really did, and it was good for me. So I think that's kind of more the, rather than, yes, I would like to do lots of medical narration, but also I still love doing books and just got some more on my plate, which I'm very excited about. But if someone handed me a commercial, I mean, oh, am I gonna say no? So my goals are more about how to sustain this a little better in a healthier way and not try to. I'm always like thinking of new things. Oh, we can do this. Oh, we can do that. No, Lynn, calm down. Focus on a few things at a time instead of 400 ideas and trying to make it all work and tiring myself out and then resenting the whole thing. That's not how you make a happy life. So.
True. Well, where can people find you and all of your amazing stuff?
Oh, okay. Well, my website is Voiced Violin, so VoiceD violin.com. There are many, many genre pages there if you're interested in a particular type of voiceover. I'm also on Facebook as me. I'm on Instagram as Norris Lynn. And I'm on TikTok as Wig Wednesday. So most of my social media strategy these days is simply to make videos of me in a colorful wig, reading Shakespeare in a goofy voice. But occasionally
That's
I'll post other
awesome.
stuff too. Yeah, I just, like I said, burnout is real. And a few years ago, I didn't know what to do for social media and was feeling very much like, I hate this. I don't want to do social media, but I also do. I just couldn't
Yeah.
find something. And I was talking to my sister and I said, I don't know, I'm just going to put on a wig and read Shakespeare in a British accent or something. And I'll call it, I don't know, Wig Wednesday. And she said, I think that's hilarious. So I did it just for her. And then have done it a lot, although I did miss last Wednesday. Bad on me because I didn't know what day it was until it was in. Or I was like, wait, today's Thursday? Oh no. So when I know the calendar, I try to stay on it doing it. But I've had people that I have no idea have ever seen it. I did an audiobook. The one Sovis Award that I won, I was a part of a fantastic cast doing a musical audiobook, which was fantastic. It was Puss in Boots. It was wonderful. And I was a little part, but I got to win the award. I was very excited about it, along with everyone else. And so I don't know why I was telling you that. Whoa, my brain just went whoop. Sorry about that. Whoa. But shoot, there was a point. What was I talking about right before that? Oh, Wig Wednesday.
Wig Wednesday,
Yes,
yeah.
sorry. Like, I know I'm getting there. So I was looking for something that was, fun and whatever. And this producer reached out for another musical audiobook and said, I really love your Wig Wednesdays. And I was like, you've seen my Wig Wednesdays? What? Like, what? That's crazy. So that's always fun when people are like, oh, you're the wig girl, whatever. Like, I kind of like that now. But so that's on TikTok. It's at Wig Wednesday. I think that's
That's
everywhere that
awesome.
I'm on LinkedIn, but mostly that was old school. Like, I'm connected to a lot of voiceover and production houses now, but I'm also connected to a ton of finance people, because that was kind of before. But yeah, that's where you can find me. Or you can, if you're interested in either getting help in your business or helping people in their
Yes.
business, go to VAFORVO.com and we will help you.
Which will be in the show notes.
Yay.
Thanks for coming on. This was fun.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
I really hope you enjoyed this peek into the incredibly resourceful and talented mind of Lynn and her story from Wall Street to being an award-winning voiceover talent. If you'd like to see her work, you can visit voicedbylynn.com. And if you'd like to discuss outsourcing parts of your business, you can check out vaforvo.com. Thanks for stopping by, and I'll catch you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit vocoffeeshop.com and our YouTube channel or your favorite podcast streaming platform. You know you want to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.